Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's Essential Morning Show.
PCR 2.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to it next.
On the podcast today, China, China, and more China. Yep, we're still on the story. First, basketball diplomacy.
There's twice as many fans there as there are people here in the United States.
China's war of words with the NBA continues while new hope of a trade deal, any deal, emerges.
So we're talking about a skinny deal now? Is that what we're calling it? A skinny margarita? I don't like skinny burritos.
Then Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
This really shows how China tries to use economic coercion and blackmail to get American companies to engage in censorship.
And finally, the American C-suite in China.
If the American public didn't know what was happening, was there anybody left who didn't know what China was about? Now everybody knows.
I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. It's Wednesday, October 9th. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan. Andrew's off today.
Let's get you caught up. This week has been a wild ride for the markets, and it's all to do with China. On Tuesday, the U.S. blacklisted another 28 Chinese companies from doing business stateside, and the Dow declined over 300 points on concerns that a trade deal between the two was unlikely. Before markets opened this morning, however, we caught wind of reports that China may be open to a partial trade deal. A skinny deal, if you will, despite the blacklist. On these reports, the Dow is indicated to open up, not a complete rebound from Tuesday, but a big enough jump to get Joe and Becky talking this morning.
The futures jumping sharply this morning after a report that said China is open to a partial trade deal despite the U.S. tech blacklist. This comes after a decline yesterday of 313 points for the Dow on concerns that a deal was not going to happen. If you dig into the report, though, it sounds like it would be a very minor deal that they'd be open to. They say they'd be open to a limited deal as long as no more tariffs are imposed by President Trump, including two rounds of higher duties that were set to take effect this month and then again in December. In return, they said they would be open to things. This is an official who was speaking on background, according to this report. They'd be open to things like non-core concessions, like purchases of agricultural products. They say they would still not budge on major sticking points. So a lot to read into in that report that, again, was an anonymous official speaking to one news source. Eunice Yoon joins us right now from Beijing. She has more on that front. Eunice, good morning.
Good morning, Becky. So that report says that China, as you had said, is open to a partial trade deal. But by that, they mean that the U.S. would have to lift all the tariffs or at least not impose any more tariffs. Beijing buys more stuff, but then doesn't have to compromise on any of the major sticking points. So in other words, not a whole lot has changed in that position. In fact, generally, the expectations for a breakthrough on a trade deal this week are very low here. The standoff then between China and the authorities, as well as the NBA, continues to escalate. Today, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, arrives in China. He won't have the usual welcome that NBA commissioners have had in the past by China. In fact, he's facing a full tirade of state media. In fact, the Chinese state media has been comparing the Hong Kong riots, which was the in quotes riots, which was the topic of the tweet of the general manager of the Houston Rockets, to the 9/11. And also the state media said that Adam Silver, if he thinks that endorsing the indiscriminate violence of the radical Hong Kong protesters are resorting to is supporting freedom of expression, then he should think again. So a tough situation for him right now. The NBA, there's an NBA fan event tonight that's been canceled. There's also supposed to be a briefing today, which was postponed. There's supposed to be an exhibition game tomorrow between the LA Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets. So far, that game is still on, but we don't know whether or not it's unclear whether or not it's going to continue to go ahead, though Adam Silver is expected to be speaking at a press briefing tomorrow associated with that game. Guys?
That's amazing, because Silver's comments over here, we think of them in a different light, that it was like way too appeasing to China. Over there, They're playing it the other way. So we're talking about a skinny deal now? Is that what we're calling it?
That's what Phil Orlando called it.
I know, but a skinny margarita, I don't like skinny burritos. It's skinny bundle, do you get any channel?
I like the marketing on it. It sounds a lot better.
But it's no good. It's like
a partial trade deal.
It's like unsatisfying. Nobody wants a skinny deal, but that's all. Well, is that the best we can hope for?
Has China taken all these other issues off the table?
Yeah.
What happens?
The issues that we care most about are, we're not talking about those anymore. But we'll buy some more soybeans.
$10 billion.
All right. Thank you.
But maybe a skinny deal is better than no deal? An armistice?
It's a kick the can deal. Kick the can down the road. We'll come back later, right? Something that we're going to look at later.
That sounds much worse than a skinny deal. Yeah.
Eunice, thank you.
I'll tell you what I was reading just on the way in, and I was thinking about, you know, how companies view China and how, vis-a-vis the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
Did you read how many fans there are in China?
Yeah, there's twice as many fans there as there are people here in the United States.
That was the statistic that stuck in my head. They're pretty serious fans.
Yes,
too.
Hardcore. Although you did see a lot of blowback when they felt like they weren't being supported.
But the numbers are, you know, we've got
310 million people.
Yeah, there's like 500 million really big fans in.
I think there's even more than
so. It's starting to become a.
This is why you see companies trying to walk such a fine line.
Right. So now I feel bad. I don't feel bad, but I feel compassion for Adam Silver.
Trying to walk that line.
And that, I don't know what he gets paid, but you wonder why these guys get paid. This is a, I don't know where, what do you do right now? It's all, the cat's out of the bag, sort of.
I think you try and lay low. I mean, that's what all of these companies
do. But it's easy for South Park. They don't,
not so easy for South Park. South Park came out with that, and China immediately pulled their shows off of streaming
services. Right, but it's not that, it's still not.
There was blowback for them,
but that doesn't hurt them like the NBA. The NBA has a lot.
Probably not, yes.
And how many other companies are in this same position? Now,
Apple,
right,
front and center.
But so we have.
Apple was getting some grief yesterday for taking, I think, the Taiwanese flag emoji off of their phones that they sell in China.
You know, they're saying that China needs the NBA too. That they're really.
You don't want to tick off 500 million people, 600 million people.
But they really want it. It's going to be hard if they.
Nationalism is rising, I think, both here and in China, and that's an issue to deal with too.
Squawk Pod. We'll be right back. Welcome back. On today's Squawk Pod, we walk you through several angles of our coverage on China. The country's vice premier is expected in Washington Thursday for the latest round of trade talks, and professional basketball is about to play two exhibition games in Shanghai and Shenzhen. We spoke to a sitting senator in the middle of an Asia-Pacific tour who also happens to have an opinion on the NBA in China. Texas Republican Ted Cruz tweeted over the weekend that he was proud of Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey for calling out the Chinese Communist Party's treatment of protesters in Hong Kong. But he said now, in pursuit of big money, the NBA is shamefully retreating. Ted Cruz dialed into Squawk Box while most Americans were just waking up today. Here's Joe Kernan.
Senator Cruz joins us this morning on the Squawk Line from Taiwan, believe it or not, ahead of an expected trip to Hong Kong in the coming days, so I have no idea what the delay is going to look like, Senator. But there was a backtrack of the backtrack, and now I think there's a backtrack of the backtrack of the backtrack. I mean, you can't envy the NBA or the commissioner in this. Where do you think we are right now, Senator?
Well, good morning, Joe. It's good to be with you. You're right. We've seen the NBA falling all over itself to backtrack, and everybody understands why. There's big money in China, and the NBA teams make a whole lot of money broadcasting in China, having subscriptions in China, having online subscriptions, having fans there. But that being said, I think this really shows how China tries to use economic coercion and blackmail to get American companies to engage in censorship. What Daryl Morey said was perfectly reasonable. The protesters in Hong Kong are standing up for democracy. They're standing up for human rights, and indeed they're walking the streets of Hong Kong carrying quotes from America's founding fathers. They're asking for the same rights that everyone wants. And to see what the NBA did, because as soon as Daryl Morey tweeted this, the NBA suspended the Rockets coverage in China, knocked them off TV, knocked them off the internet, boycotted them, and we suddenly saw a whole series of just abject apologies. And I got to say, the NBA should be better than that. We should not be willing instrumentalities of Chinese censorship. It's one thing for China to censor their own citizens, but when American companies and a sports league like the NBA, that is truly a global marquee brand, is willing to press itself simply in pursuit of additional dollars in China, I think that's really, really unfortunate, and it's a dangerous precedent.
Yeah, it was the wokest of our sports leagues here too. I mean, and it's, you know, whether you like being woke or not or appreciate it, it's sad that, you know, that the being woke is, it doesn't really go that deep, does it? I guess when dollar signs come into the picture, you can leave woke behind and come back to the real world, which is, I don't know. It's just this is a very cynical story, Senator. Right.
Well, and Joe, it's a striking contrast. You know, we've seen when different states in the United States have passed laws protecting religious liberty, that athletic leagues have been perfectly willing to declare boycotts of those states and to denounce them loudly based on LGBT issues. Well, that's easy to do because that doesn't cost them any money, so it lets them virtue signal all day long. But there's nothing at stake here. When the Chinese communists in Hong Kong are oppressing dissidents, are suppressing free speech, or violating human rights, where the stakes matter intensely, and there's a choice between standing for free speech and human rights or making another buck, sadly the NBA has demonstrated where its priorities lie, and I believe we can do better. I think what the NBA should have done is the NBA should have stood with the Rockets, should have said, you can't boycott one team. If you want, you know, any time an American company does business with China, there are risks entails. But if our companies are all willing to be essentially an arm of Chinese censorship, that exports their repressive policies and regime to the United States and globally.
Right.
Senator, can I just ask you a question? This morning, the futures are up by about 200 points on the idea, based on a couple of news reports out there, that the Chinese would be willing to make a deal. You read into it, and again, these are officials who aren't named in a couple of reports that are out there, but they're suggesting that China would accept a limited deal as long as there's no more tariffs imposed by the president, and that they'd be willing to buy an additional $10 billion in U.S. agricultural goods on top of the $20 billion they already purchased. Does that sound like the type of deal you'd support?
Oh, look, I'm hopeful that we get a deal and a good deal with China. I think trade with China is important, and I think when it comes to the president's trade agenda, where it has been, where I agree with it the most is concerning China. China's trade policies have for a long time not been fair and not been on an even or level playing ground. That they export about $500 billion into the United States, and they only import about $100 billion. And so I think the president is right to try to lean in and get fairer terms. And in fact, I can tell you what I and most Republican senators have urged the president repeatedly is focus on China. Try to really open up that market to more goods and services, but don't at the same time engage in a trade battle with all of our other trading partners. And I think it would be good to see a trade deal with China, but we can do that without at the same time linking back to this NBA issue we were just discussing. We can do that without compromising our values. We don't have to do that to be able to engage in trade.
Senator, while we have you here, there's some other stuff going on. I just want a quick comment from you. What would it take, what would you need to see in terms of this Ukraine situation for you to say, okay, I'm gonna vote with Romney if he happened to go that way? I mean, do you see any possibility of President Trump losing 20 Republican senators, assuming he gets all that the Democrats stay
Well,
vote as one.
Look, I'm not going to engage in hypotheticals about what conduct might be sufficient. I can tell you, I think the behavior of House Democrats has been that they have been looking to undo this election since November of 2016. That the view of House Democrats, without any facts, and really irrespective of the facts, is that the House Democrats want to impeach the president. And I think there's a very good possibility the House Democrats will vote to impeach the president. But it's not based on actual conduct. It's not based on facts. And in fact, they already are there before any investigation. In the Senate, I voted along with all 100 senators. Every Republican, every Democrat voted for the Senate Intelligence Committee to investigate this matter and find out what happens. I think we should actually look at the facts, but that's not what the House Democrats are doing. What the House Democrats are doing is trying to undo an election because they're unhappy with how the American people voted in 2016.
Can you tell us why we're talking to you in Taiwan, where you've been, what you've found out, Well, how much can you tell us? I know that you weren't free to talk about everything before, but now that you've left some of these countries.
Well, sure. So I am in the midst of an Indo-Pacific tour. I started off in Hawaii, meeting with the Indo-Pacific Command and the Pacific Fleet and getting fairly extensive briefings and meetings with them about the security threats throughout the Indo-Pacific. I then was in Japan yesterday and earlier today, met with Prime Minister Abe, had a good discussion both about trade and the Japanese-American trade deal that we just signed this week, which I think is great. It's great for Texas farmers and ranchers, opening up more agricultural trade, and it's great for commerce generally. But also spent quite a bit of time talking with Prime Minister Abe about mutual security threats. And the dominant security threat for Japan, for Taiwan, where I am now, and the other countries that I'm going on this tour, the dominant threat in this region is China. China is getting more and more aggressive militarily. They are investing billions in modernizing their military. They are investing massive amounts of money, engaging in economic coercion. Their program that they call the One Belt, One Road initiative is investing massive amounts of money throughout Asia, throughout Africa, through Latin America, and essentially trying to get impoverished governments to take either loan deals or very attractive terms and be in a position where China can effectively control the infrastructure of those countries.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay.
Next on Squawk Pod, China's putting pressure on the NBA, but what about Apple, Amazon, Google, Home Depot, Nike? Behind China's offense with American companies.
It clearly demonstrates how insecure they feel. That they have to come down so hard on this suggests that they are concerned about their existence.
We'll be right back.
Stand Joe by.
This is Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
Says Mike.
Welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan along with Becky Quick. Andrew is off today. Protests are continuing in Hong Kong, and Chinese state media is accusing the NBA of endorsing Hong Kong violence. Chinese organizers canceled a fan event on the eve of tomorrow's exhibition game in Shanghai between the Nets and the Lakers. This is after, of course, Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey tweeted over the weekend backing the Hong Kong protesters, or I guess backing them, that's a strong word, just lending some support. The NBA's business in China is said to be worth more than $4 billion. That didn't factor in any of this. So, meantime, reports say that ESPN is directing its employees for the first time ever to steer clear of politics. And that got to be a first, isn't it? Really? What's been happening for the last 5 years? And just focus on basketball during its coverage, according to an internal memo from a senior ESPN executive. Amazing. Joining us now to talk about the challenges of doing business in China right now is CNBC contributor Michelle Caruso Cabrera and Greg Portell, head of Global Consumer Industries and Retail Practice at A.T. Kearney. Michelle, Greg, thanks for joining us. Michelle, what did you think when you first saw this? You a basketball fan, NBA fan?
I don't watch a lot of basketball, to be honest.
Do they have a court at opera? When you see opera, there's no there's no sports whatsoever,
no.
Are there?
You and the, no.
Right. Okay.
No.
But not when, your cup of tea.
No. But when I saw this all go down, it really struck me how bad the Chinese are at propaganda. They're very bad propagandists. It's unbelievable.
They should be great,
they should be great at it because that's what they, in theory, that's what they do. But to have completely misunderstood the American public, to have elevated somebody who was not a household name to the degree that they did, they could have just suppressed discussion of this tweet within China, as they do with all things when it comes to their social media. They could have blacked it out, but to have elements said, we're going to cancel games, we're not going to show it on TV, is to have created a situation which now means that if the American public didn't know what was happening, was there anybody left who didn't know what China was about and what was happening in Hong Kong? Now everybody knows.
It probably speaks to them feeling like they're backed into a corner to a certain extent.
In terms of Hong Kong?
No, in terms of pressure on the economy, wanting to make sure they crack down very harshly on U.S. companies,
yep,
on anything headed into these trade deals.
I think you speak to another point that I would make about them, is that it clearly demonstrates how insecure they feel. That they have to come down so hard on this suggests that they are concerned about their existence. Now, I am not saying that the fall of the Chinese regime is coming. A lot of people have predicted that, and it hasn't happened.
They're just a little touchy these
days. They are extremely touchy, and you have to ask why. Do they fear for their existence? Do they fear about the economy? I bet they do, because it is weakening, regardless of the trade war.
Greg, what do you make of all these discussions we're having?
Well, the challenge facing multinational companies is that despite all the complexity, despite all the noise, China is one of the last remaining sources of pure consumer consumption growth. So CEOs around the world need to engage the market, and that creates the complexity that you start to see.
And, I mean, if you were the NBA right now, if you were Adam Silver, how would you approach this?
Well, I mean, the challenge that companies face is that they're starting to get increased pressure to have a voice on human rights, to have a voice on political issues, social issues.
As long as it's not
China. We've seen that. Well, that's where the NBA has kind of walked themselves into a discussion that probably isn't very helpful for them in the long term. But if you're going to have a brand, you need to stand for something, and that's clearly what Adam Silver's trying to do now.
Every company has walked into it, right? Every company that has said, we're not going to do business in a certain state in the United States because
right,
they have passed this certain law. Now you have to turn to them and say, okay, so are you going
to
do business in a
they're
country that
go
puts
to the
Muslims
White House
in concentration
go
camps,
to the White,
right?
Right, they're not going to go to the White House if they win the championship. They're not going to, I mean, have you read Steve Kerr and his comments on a deal, or Popovich? Do you see what they say about our own domestic situation?
Well, and that's
and
the
they're
conundrum.
Afraid they're
right,
afraid to look askance at a communist party. I mean,
look,
that reeks of hypocrisy and
right,
and being dictated by money, Greg. I think it's an awful precedent for PR.
Well, it goes back to, if you're going to do business in China, which every company now has to do, you have to have and develop a pretty proactive multi-layer strategy that involves not only figuring out how do you serve the Chinese consumer, how do you manage your supply chain, but then also how do you manage all of the overlay of political and social issues. You know, in the U.S., many of these companies have had experience with it. In Europe, they've had experience with it. China is a new adventure for many of these companies, and it shows the importance of needing to have that comprehensive strategy and manage it on an ongoing basis.
I don't know. What kind of strategy can you have when
you got to choose sides?
You got to choose. Your consumer forces you to pick a side, right? That's the demand of consumers right now, particularly in America. And now the Chinese consumer appears to have demands based on the supposed outcry that was seen there. Which side do you choose? Because they're very different sides, right?
Well, and it goes back to one of the evaluations that we always ask clients is, how strong is your brand and what do you want it to stand for? Because if you are going to have a brand that has a voice, that voice is going to be challenged. Now, where you start to run into problems is when the consumers in one market and their preferences differ from the consumers in another market. Which fence do you, or which side of the fence do you fall on?
Exactly.
It's you know, multi-layered complexity when you talk about issues such as the ones we're talking about in Hong Kong and China.
You know, if you're woke, Greg, it shouldn't be controlled by who has where your financial interest is. You're either woke or you're not.
Well, what drives the financial interest in both markets may be different.
You know what I'm saying.
South Park hit right, such a sensitive spot yesterday because they said, we too believe more in money over democracy? I mean, that's what this comes down to. Are brands going to be forced to take a side? Are companies going to have to pick one side or the other?
Well, one of the elements that you see companies respond with is localization of many of those brands. So the brands can have different voices in different markets. Something like the NBA, however, is a global brand, a global powerhouse brand, and that puts them in the crosshairs.
All right. Greg Portell, thanks. Michelle, thanks for being here.
That's today's Squawk Pod. On our rundown tomorrow, earnings season is taking off. Delta CEO Ed Bastian joins us with his airline's numbers and much more. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
We're pros here, aren't we? This is like Wayne's World, isn't it?
Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.